Hey, we've all used broadcast automation playout systems, but have you met the brains behind developing these systems? Well, we're meeting him today. It's Alan Freeman. He got started in this way back in the late 1980s and developed many different automation systems and features and functionalities over the years. Alan Freeman is our guest this week on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio. Audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com.
By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support, online at nautel.com.
And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to that light bulb at the top of the tower. Hello, I'm Kirk Harnack, back in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee, off the road from last week, and delighted to be back here at home. And you're in for another treat, where we're going to bring you a luminary from radio technology. And that's Mr. Alan Freeman. We're going to introduce him in just a minute. It's a beautiful summer, sunshiny day here in Nashville. Temperature's 81 degrees outside, 75 here in the studio. And with the Mukwonago Weather Report, ladies and gentlemen, Chris Tarr. Hey, Chris, welcome in.
Well, you know what? It's been spring/summer in the Midwest. It was, 75 yesterday. I think it's 60 today. So it's slowly inching its way up. I don't believe we're going to have any more snowstorms. I don't hold me to that, but I think we're pretty much done with the snow now here in Mukwonago.
Wow, it's good to see you are in the office today, but you've been a busy boy, haven't you?
I have, and at some point, once we if we have a show without a guest again, I'll have to get you all up to speed. But yeah, I put a couple signals on the air, replaced transmission line antenna and a transmitter to site, and just all kinds of stuff. So. This is actually probably the first afternoon I've been in the office for a long time. And then tomorrow I'm on the road again for a day. And next week I'm gone for a couple of days. And so it's been crazy.
Well, as you know, there are a couple of reasons why I really like having you as a guest, Chris Tarr. First of all, you're very interesting. You're always doing interesting things. You provide good quality pictures. You talk in detail about what you've been doing. But also there's financial reasons, because, you see, when you're a co-host, I got to pay you. But as we all know, the guests pay to be on the show. and so it sums out to zero.
You know, I was going to say, I sometimes lose money on this deal. I'm not sure how that works.
Well, we should bring in the man who doesn't know yet that he's paying to be on the show. See, he's going to offer to pay to get off the show is what he's going to do. Ladies and gentlemen, Alan Freeman. Alan, welcome. Good to see you here on TWRT.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah. You are in, you're somewhere in Texas, aren't you? Like around, Irving, Texas, Dallas?
Arlington.
Oh, Arlington. Okay. Hey, your mic is could be a little louder. I don't know if you can lean forward toward it or yank it closer to you. Chris and I would like to be disc jockeys. We get on the microphone.
So, yeah.
That'd be good. So, Alan, you and your career started way before you and I ever met, back in the mid-90s. And we're going to look at some pictures, but give us a little taste of what's coming up. What do you think? What are you most proud of in terms of broadcast software development?
It's something that went by the wayside. It was CDs. When right after we got into playing everything from the hard drive, I got into controlling the CD changers, the mega changers. Mm-hmm. And I liked that good, solid, uncompressed audio, And so I had all the mechanics of that figured out. And of course, uncompressed audio took over. And so I missed that kind of.
It was a lot of work at controlling those things. And I want to talk about that a bit. Not right now. We're going to take a quick break from our first sponsor. But, and Chris Tarr, did you yourself have experience with the CD-based automation systems, those big, huge changers?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I had an automation system that used the, six disc magazines, and we had a whole row of players, with the Digilink system. And I liked it a lot. Although I do have a couple horror stories from it, but, back in the day of, not being able to store uncompressed audio, it sounded fantastic.
Gotcha. Well, we're going to let Alan tell us about the systems that he worked with that had the mega changers. I mean, I worked with the 60 discs ones, and I heard there was a 100 disc one, but we'll let Alan tell us about that in a minute. Our show This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by our friends at Nautel. And as usual, Nautel being a friend to the industry and helping us engineers out, trying to help us look good and all that. Nautel is doing a series of Transmission Talk Tuesdays this month, and the next one coming up is May 23rd. Now, that is this coming Tuesday. If you're watching our show live or soon after we did it live this week, we're recording this on May the 18th, but coming up on Transmission Talk Tuesday on May 23rd, HD Radio from the Ground Up. Now, I know it's been around a while, but, a lot of us engineers, we may have had some early experiences and then nothing for a long time. Some of you in bigger cities especially have dealt with HD radio even through all the generations of equipment that's come out. I got to deal with it early on in terms of audio processing, but I never actually set a system up. How about that? And I'm going to be setting up one of them probably next month in Oxford, Mississippi. So as more and more FM stations get FM translators, they're turning on their HD2s to feed the translator. Well, HD radio from the Ground Up, we've spoken about this before on the Transmission Talk Tuesday roundtable with an eye toward costs, new features, and things like that. But we've not really done a lot of talking about the things we can do to optimize existing installations or what you need to be aware of when you're tasked with figuring out what you need for a new install, like me. There's going to be a lot of discussion on the different combining methods, whether equipment should be at the studio or on site. That was a big question for me in designing my new system, and what needs to be considered in each case. Well, I've already talked to Jeff Welton about my installation in Mississippi, but he's going to bring on a few experts in the field, and it's going to be a lively discussion. Sign up for that at nautel.com/webinars. Click on Transmission Talk Tuesday, and this is the one about HD radio. There are more Transmission Talk Tuesdays coming up this summer. In June, they've got two of them. July, there's one. And August, there's one. So it's not every week. So you need to put these on your calendar. Have your calendar remind you. And when you sign up, it'll ask you, hey, do you want to put this on Outlook calendar, Google calendar, whatever? And then Nautel will send you a couple of emails to remind you about that. Thanks, Nautel, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. And remember, go to nautel.com/webinars and click on Transmission Talk Tuesday. All right, Alan Freeman is our guest. And hey, Suncast, you've got hold of a folder full of pictures, and we're going to buzz through as many of those as we can. I want to encourage Chris Tarr, please jump in with any questions or comments as we go through these. But Alan was kind enough to provide a bunch of pictures, and they're going to take us back into the 1990s and then the early 2000s with Alan's work. So, Suncast, I think if we don't get started on the pictures, we're not going to get to them all. So why don't we just go ahead and start popping those up and ask Alan why they're important to him. Oh, that looks like a phone system, Alan. What is that?
That is a phone system, yes. Right out of high school, I got thrown into a central office situation, and I learned all about electronics. Actually, I scored so high on electronics tests for the Air Force, they made me take it again under a watchful eye because they thought I cheated. And so they put me in a job that most people have to die. There has to be a death in the central office to get in there usually. And I was blessed with that.
Wow. Well, and by the way, now you know why Chris Tarr had to take SBE tests twice, because he scores so high on them. it put him under a watchful eye. Isn't that right, Chris?
No. Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Oh my gosh. All right. And by the way, that's how Chris got his job. Somebody passed away. That's
never. It was written in the will. I don't have any skills. It was part of the succession, apparently.
For the succession plan. All right, what's the next picture here, Suncast? Oh.
Wow. That's me in your territory right now. That was at WMTS FM in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, about 20 miles from Nashville, and that was back around 1978. And so DJing.
Yeah. You know, I was DJing at the same time too. Chris, on the other hand, wasn't even born yet, but those TFT mod monitors. And yeah, that is down the road from me, WMTS. I, at the same time, was in Richmond, Kentucky at WEKY. Let's spin in the hits there. Let's look at the next picture. Let's buzz on through here, Suncast. Because we got some other. I saw you from WMTS from these picture names. What is going on here in Murfreesboro?
All right. That's some promotion that we had. And that gentleman in the suit there is Monty Hell, the voice of the Blue Raiders. And he owned WGNS for a while and WMTS AM and FM. And he's the guy that got me on this path. One night I was pulling cables as we were rewiring an AM studio. And he came in at 2 a.m. and I was working with Jim Gilmore, who is an audio genius. And Monty said, are you guys going to have this on the air by 5 a.m.? And we said, yeah. And he said, Alan, you need to be doing what Jim's doing. Being an announcer isn't a lifetime career. And
wow.
So that's that, where I took my...
I'm sorry. It's amazing you mentioned Jim Gilmore, and we got another picture or two that has his name in it. So let's continue on here, as we do have a lot of pictures. This is just outside of in Middle Tennessee, in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, which is far enough away from Nashville to where it's the media in Murfreesboro, you know, can stand on its own. Where's this at, Alan?
This is an AM directional that I was chief engineer and morning man at. It was like KPAR in Granbury, Texas, and their signal goes into Fort Worth. And so I did that for about 4 years, and it was fun.
Wow. I got it by the clock on the wall. Is this 10 to 8 in the morning or 10 to 8 in the evening, would you say?
That was 10 to 8 in the evening.
Okay. Hard to get that many people.
I'm one of those places to see a sunrise once a year, at least.
What that console, that looks like it predates the Autogram design. That looks like the Collins design.
Rockwell, I think.
Rockwell, and then Rockwell Collins. Yeah. All right. Let's move on. What's next?
A couple of years later, where I cut my hair finally. And again, this is analog radio.
What? Where's that at? Q10 what?
That's KPAR in Granbury. It's within the Q102 Dallas signal.
What, you were wearing somebody else's t-shirt? Is that right?
Yeah. How do you like that?
I think I would have gotten fired for that. And those turntables,
go ahead.
No, those turntables, my goodness, how many of us played records on those things? And the triple decker Spotmaster from BE on your left hand side there.
Mm-hmm. And the big hands.
Oh yeah, the big headphones. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. All right. What's next here?
And this is analog automation. This is what we replaced with computers. So one computer doesn't even take the space of one of those reel-to-reels practically, you know?
Now, I'm sure Chris Tarr has done the same thing here. I see there's two air chains there. There's the Orban air chain, and then there's the CRL processing setup. Alan, how were you comparing those two? What was one backup? What's the deal?
One of them was backup, yeah. One of them was older equipment, and it was a backup.
Chris, I know I had a similar setup at a station or two. Did you ever have those two in parallel or just a main and backup?
No, actually, by the time I got started, CRL was the big chain, so that was a lot of my experience. Obviously, now we tend to do that. You know, we have backup chains, but... You know, back in my day in Wisconsin, we were lucky to even have processing.
All right. Let's see what picture's next. Oh, more automation. What controller is that? Do you know, Alan?
I believe that's a Harris controller. but I don't hold me to that one. This is just a picture I pulled out to show what the analog automation was for people who never saw it.
Now, at some point, Alan, did you get inspired by looking at these automations and thinking, you know, I think I can make a computer do that?
At one point, it happened in 89, but I looked at these things over and over again, just marveling at the electronics and the smoothness of how they ran. There was less parts in that than there were in the telephone exchange, so they were easy to work on.
That's a good way to look at that.
You have to go to the controller to do source tray, source tray, source tray. I remember those.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And that's actually, I'll get to that in a minute. That's how I came up with the idea for doing it all from the PC, was I was writing an interface for a Harris 9000 to take a music log and a traffic log and suck it into the Harris 9000 so you wouldn't have to manually program in the steps. And in the process of doing that, I stumbled on an audio card from Walt Disney. And I asked what the card was for, and they said, oh, that makes the animals talk. And so I recorded Garth Brooks and a couple of spots and commercials and jingles on it and showed it to the boss and said, hey, you know, we can just play everything from the hard drive. And he goes, oh, get back on the Harris 9000 thing. Hard drives are too expensive, and so are touch screens right now.
Wow. All right, well, let's see what's next before we take our break. Let's hit a couple more. Another automation, different one.
Yep, that's another one of the old timers, and that's not mine. And look, it looks like it's even in somebody's kitchen.
It does. Oh, my gosh. Cabinets, coffee maker, maybe a sink back there. Oh, my gosh. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it is amazing to watch these automations go through their steps and start different things. There's something magical about watching these things happen as programmed, and what comes out could be a smooth transition from song to song. There'd be some overlap time. You'd have an announcer. You'd have a time announce. It's 4:13, you know, or whatever. And it's so cool to watch that stuff, but a lot of mechanics wrong there. And a human being had to go change tapes. You know, the setup would only run for so many hours before a human being had to go update it and keep it going. Hey, it's This Week in Radio Tech.
My favorite is when you're rewinding a tape and that source opens up. So all you hear on the air is beep, 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 as the tape rewinds. That's my favorite story about those.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I remember that. Gee. Okay. Hey, we're talking to Alan Freeman, and I promise he'll get more words in edgewise. We're about to jump into the era where Alan first started developing PC-based automation playout systems, and there was still a lot of mechanical interfacing going on there. So we'll get to that and carry it through a couple of decades worth of development here. So This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about, like I said, everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower. And Broadcast Bionics has long been a sponsor of ours. Got to see Dan McQuillan and other people from Broadcast Bionics at the NAB show. And Dan's going to be on with us to talk about virtualization, taking things that Alan Freeman started doing years ago and making it even just more controllable, amazing, maybe more reliable. Anyway, Bionics is one of our sponsors. We're going to hear from them. Be right back.
Welcome to the Bionic Studio. The Bionic Studio brings all audience interaction to the fingertips of a production team in radio, TV, and podcast. Our workflow-led system is working 24/7 around the world for small broadcasters and national and international networks. Our telephony module, Bionic Talk Show, allows cost-effective centralization, remote operation, scalability, and resilience across an entire network of stations, but at the same time is used in single-studio self-op environments. Social media curation and activity is now considered a broadcast-critical part of programming. Bionic Social means the studio isn't overwhelmed with a wall of interaction from an ever-growing number of social platforms. We combine SMS, MMS, and email together with a speech-to-text service for listeners using smart speakers. We enable studio teams to curate, filter, and display all platforms in one place, and post text, images, and video content to multiple platforms in one operation. effortless collection of video content with Bionic Director has helped position some of the world's most successful stations as leaders in viral content, generating appointments to listen and free marketing via retweets and shares. Bionic Contest enables end-to-end tracking of on-air competitions, live reads, and prizes. These could be on-air contests, automated SMS entry, or online. Anywhere, and Skype TX for Radio brings high-quality audio and video contribution into the studio with ease. No need for dedicated PCs to run different applications. Everything is controlled within the Bionic Studio UI, and incoming connections are visible to users along with all other platforms. Our codec integration enables connection, algorithm configuration, and directory to a wide range of IP and ISDN codecs. The Bionic Studio, a unique suite of products designed to enable your talent to work smarter.
Indeed, that's true. And hey, Bionic's new virtual rack works with Docker-based software containers, such as those made by my employer, Telos Alliance. And I'm working with some of those right now. So I can't wait to get Dan McQuillan on and show you what's next in the world of broadcast automation. And I don't mean automating the programming. I mean automating the equipment, the virtual equipment that runs the automation. That's several levels deep now. Anyway, thanks a lot, Broadcast Bionics, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. Chris Tarr is along from Wanago, and Alan Freeman is our guest. He is the founder, owner, president at WinTech. And that's a consulting and development company. So, Alan, welcome back. And we're going to start taking us through some more of these pictures. And hopefully we'll jump right into the 1990s here pretty soon. Suncast?
Okay.
It's up to you. Show us what's next. Oh, there's a computer. All right. What is this, Alan?
That is a grid computer from Radio Shack, or Tandy, rather. And it was one of the first computers to have an audio card in it. And I tried to write software that would talk to that audio card, and the computer was just too slow at swapping the buffers out. So I ended up using, at first, the Walt Disney sound cards on our first five or six installations. This is when I was with the management, Electric Works Corp. And so we did about six installations before a really decent audio card came out. This was back between 89 and 92. And so this is where we took Pokas away from Poignet, Wisconsin. We installed a computer there, and they were being fed by a satellite feed from Dallas. Just easy listening music and one Poka an hour. So we weren't very loved there.
I know Chris and his classmates got super upset about that.
Hey, now, you know, I love Pokas. Actually, we own that station and the building.
What?
WIBU.
WIBU. That's right, out on WIBU Road.
Oh my gosh! Mm-hmm. What a small world. How about that? And Alan, yeah, you mentioned something that I'd kind of forgotten about. And that is, you know, a lot of stations in the late 70s or the early 80s, especially, went to satellite delivered programming. Satellite Music Network was the big one that I was familiar with. And they might have some cart machines that would get fired off, but somebody still had to go change carts unless they had a whole bunch of, you know, rotating spots. But you'd use an automation system to play the spots and to play the liners and to play the IDs. Was that one of the early uses you saw?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the first installation I did was KCDY in Carlsbad, New Mexico. And they, KCDY, and I can't remember the other call sign, but they were using SMN and a Harris 9000 automation system. And so we replaced the automation system. We took the cues from the I think they were Gentner satellite units. They had three or four different cue tones they would send down, and we'd play local spots and IDs. And so that was the first installation was a satellite-driven one.
Wow. Yeah, that kind of figures. All right, Suncast, what's next in the hit parade? Oh, look at this. Making graphics in DOS.
Yep, that was the first one. This was Digital DJ, the production module. And Yeah, I had to jump some hoops to get graphics in DOS, and it was DOS, and it stayed DOS for 4 or 5 years. And to this day, I still run into people on the Facebook forums who say, "Hey, that was my first system. I loved it. You know, it's easy."
Digital DJ, was that with Electric Works Corporation that you were working with?
Yes, and it's my claim that this is the very first automated software that totally did automation from the computer. I was Brian Barr over in the UK. He had the same idea cooking at the same time, but I don't think he rolled it out the door. We started advertising in Radio World, and within 2 years we had 14 competitors, and he was probably one of them.
I'm wondering how about the folks at Smarts Broadcast in where they are in Iowa.
Yeah, they Emmitsburg, I think it was. Yeah. They were on our coattail as well. They didn't have a total automation system yet when we started advertising in Radio World. So I'm not sure. They've never disputed me on that. So
yeah. I just knew they were kind of early in on the game, but you were a bit earlier, and not necessarily being first. You know, some things being first counts, like in a track meet, right? But not everything does it count. What counts is getting it right and making it usable and thereby popular.
Yeah, and the good thing about the first three, which was Electric Works and Smarts and Scott Studios, was that we all had radio people. There's a lot of people writing automation software to this day. There's like 40 different packages out there, and these people really have never sat down in the chair at a radio station, you know?
Let's move on, see what's next. All right.
And this was, in fact, the automation screen, and the closers are lined up over there on the left that came in from the satellite unit. And there's your log. And it has both music and, well, no, it's all satellite joined. This one is. There's no music in there. So it just some feel at the bottom of the hour or something.
Got you. Okay. What's next?
And then this was the sound card we were using originally from Disney had mono. And so we needed to be able to take some closers. So you see some little, and give closers. So those little relays up there. Why am I pointing? Those little relays up there were giving the closers. And then it had four inputs. And then it took analog audio and converted it to balanced to go back to the console so we could eliminate computer noise.
Wow.
Mark Mueller of Mueller Broadcast Design designed this for us.
Yeah, I've been wanting to get Mark on the show, and there's one thing or another has prevented that or slowed it down, but love to get Mark on the show. He's designed a number of useful things. In addition to being a consultant. Yeah. All right. What's next?
And there's, let's see, this is, yeah, the opening screen when you first brought up the software, and the copyright says 1990-93. That's a CD interface. I actually reverse engineered the Pioneer and Sony protocols and put them on a PIC chip. And then we stuck it inside this box that Ernest Angley, Autogram, he designed the audio inside this box. I designed the CD control inside of it. And so he was taking all the unbalanced audio from the CD changers, converting it to balance. And also I was taking and sending signals to the CD changer.
Which CD changers do you think this was working with? The ones that Chris was talking about, the six disc or the larger ones?
Well, yeah, we started off with six disc changers, but right away they came out with 100 disc changers. And so we moved over to 100 disc changers. And then it wasn't too much longer. We had 300 and 400 disc changers.
Oh my God. Wow.
And Thank God Pioneer and Sony both left us a loophole to get those things to queue up and just sit there and wait on us.
Yeah. Was that not included with some of the original designs?
Oh, no. It was just basically designed that you take the remote and pick a CD and pick a song with the remote control. And if you have three or 400 discs in there, there's no way you can enjoy your library like that. You had a little book to flip through to see where, you know, what disc slot your CD was in.
Yeah.
And then you'd have to look down the track and say, oh, go to CD 27, track 14. And so by automating it from the computer, we did away with that. We were able to get to them that quick. We were able to pre-queue the next one. We made this music scheduling software so that it would alternate changers so that we could be queuing up another song on another changer. So that was one of the separations.
Well, and to me, this was always a bit of a problem with when you get the larger the CD changer, the more of your library fits in there, and the more of your library is not available to play as the next song.
And we took that into consideration in loading the changers. Like, for instance, in my home installation, I think there's a picture there somewhere, but I have three Pioneer CD changers, 300 disc ones, and I've got, for instance, the TM Century Library is spread between them, just randomly spread between them so that, you're not cutting too much stuff out.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, I guess when you had those, it seems like we always tried to have at a couple stations, I did at least three changers. Also if one of them died on you while you're waiting to service it, a third, a half of your library would be gone if you only had two of them. So you had to have a variety of changers just for that purpose. Chris, do you recall, dealing with the big changers and if they ever caused you issues in terms of either scheduling or one of them being down? Oh my gosh, all the hits are on that one.
Well, we did the six disc changers, and yeah, it did create its own interesting way of having to schedule things because you only had, what was available in those six magazines that you loaded up. So what I ended up doing, it was actually pretty creative. This was back in my programming days, is, each player would be for a different category. So you had your currents, recurrents, and then your golds. And I had a rotating schedule so that you wouldn't hear this song only on Tuesdays or whatever. So they would advance across. And then what we would do is during the day we were live. And so I would be able to just schedule whatever. And we had two of the changers right in front of us, and we could just play the discs live and play whatever we wanted, but it required a lot of finessing. And I'm trying to remember what I used. I think it was Music Master to make sure that I didn't have the same song, the next song wasn't from the same magazine. Sure. You had to create separation rules and everything else. But the upside to that is during automated hours, the audio sounded fantastic because it was from CD. The downside was if you had a CD that skipped. There were two downsides. If you had a CD that skipped, it would skip through the entire time the song was supposed to play and then eventually fade out. Or you would get the wrong magazine in the wrong machine and it would just play something completely random, which, if you had hit discs, you remember they had different genres. So my AC station could be playing a country song or a rock song or, whatever, depending on, what that track was on the CD that was in there. So there, it was fraught with a little peril, but boy, did they sound great.
I always wanted to run a promo. Go ahead, Alan.
Can't go wrong. I used to say nothing can go wrong. Can't go wrong. Can't go wrong. Can't go wrong.
And guess what? Now we have a show title. Thank you very much, Alan. That'll be the show title. Nothing can go wrong. Can go wrong. Can go wrong. I always thought that it would be fun to run a promo because when these changes were introduced, it seems like the music scheduling software companies had to add a category, add a field to say, which devices it's playing from, because it couldn't schedule two back to back from the same device. That had to be added at some point. And then run a promo that says, WXYZ, where we never play two hits back to back because we can't.
You know, here's one other thing I remember from those days is they used really heavy data compression on the audio that we stored on the computer. So sometimes you'd have this issue where you'd come to, you know, come out of this crystal clear song into a commercial and be like,
come on down to Joe's Diver Press,
you know, as the audio frequency response would change based on the amount of data reduction on the disc. So, you know, those are the really early days. Or, you know, you'd have the satellite come out and, you know, you'd have the announcer from the satellite be nice and clear, you know, and then they'd say the call letters and they'd be all muffled up. So, you know, it'd be like, you know, Kenny G'd be playing and you hear the call letters. That's Kenny G, and the old days.
Well, that reminds me to ask Alan a question about the audio bit depth on these early sound cards, and I'm sure that the early ones were 8 bits of digital sampling, and so before we got 16-bit cards, and then way later we got, you know, 20 and 24-bit. But Alan, what's the worst that you remember having to deal with, and did you do anything to improve the audio that the sound card was giving you, that even though it may not have been very good?
Yeah, we started off with an 8-bit mono card, and we looked feverishly to replace that as soon as possible. And if I remember correctly, Antex out of California were the first to get a stereo sound card with balanced output. And we grabbed that one. That was the first thing coming out the chute. And then they had a dual stream one, which allowed us overlap instead of putting two cards in. So that developed pretty quickly. And I might add, Sound Blaster had been working on audio cards since the, like 1988 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And still didn't have one out the chute yet until about 94, I think, that was decent.
Gotcha. Wow. We got a lot more pictures and talking to do with Alan Freeman of WinTech Design, and he it wrote a lot of early software for the radio automation field. We're going to talk about a couple other products here real quick, and then we'll be back with more from Alan Freeman, bringing us into, you know, more modern eras of radio automation. Chris Tarr, you're here to talk about our friends at Angry Audio. And what would you like to talk about today from our friend Mike Dash?
Well, I will tell you, they have some exciting new mic processors, Mr. Harnack, that were very, very cool. The question was posed, they were looking at designing a mic processor, and, you know, they came up with a couple of designs, and Catfish, Mike Dosh, said, you know, these have too many knobs on them, and they have too many personalities, and they're really hard to set, and Corny said to send a mic, well, you know, you got so many different mics, and you got so many different, you know, ways that mics sound. You know, I'm not sure that there's an easier way to do this. And Mike Dosh said, what if we knew what microphone was going to plug into it? And that's when Cornelius Gould said, well, that changes everything. If we know what kind of mic is going in there, we know how it's going to sound. So that is how they developed the Rebel and the Smooth mic processors, excuse me, by Chameleon from Angry Audio. And what they are is the Smooth is for SM or the SM7. And the Rebel is RE for the RE20 and 27. And because they know what the mics are going to sound like, the kind of broad stroke settings are already there. You can plug it in and not adjust anything, and they'll sound really good. But behind a control panel are some minor changes you can make. Excuse me, boy. That control kind of the personality of the microphone. They have an amazing gate. And I'll tell you, unlike the gates that are just kind of there and not there, this is almost like a room size. It makes the room sound smaller behind you with less echoing and that sort of thing. All of that behind a hidden panel that you can cover up, and then all you see are the LEDs on the controller, so you can keep prying hands out of there. but again, it works with any microphone that has those capsules. So like the SM7 works fine for the SM7, or if you have an SM5, you're one of the lucky ones, it'll work with an SM5. And you can see there, that's the front panel on it. That panel comes off, and there are controls behind there that you can adjust the density and some other things just very lightly. You don't want to change the entire thing. but it is really hard to make this processor sound bad because you know what you're getting. There's the with the front panel off, you can see the controls down there. There's some density controls, personality controls, and also, you know, just a little bit to tailor the audio. But again, remember that this is designed with this particular microphone in mind. So they know what the microphone sounds like and the characteristics of the microphone. And these processors are designed custom for those particular capsules. So if you have the RE series, the Rebel is for you. If you have the SM series, the Smooth is for you. So check these out. They're very affordable. I would say they sound much better than, say, you know, the Symmetrix boxes, because you can't make it sound bad no matter how hard you try. So soon I'll have one here, and we'll do an entire show through the Smooth. I'm looking forward to that, and you'll be able to check it out. AngryAudio.com is the place to go. All these little problem solvers for your everyday hassles, plus some of the new processors like the Rebel and Smooth, all from Angry Audio.
And hey, if you need some place for that mic audio to go, to get there, to get back to the radio station, check out Max Connect Wireless. I promise you, it's amazing. It has gotten us out of several pickles. When doing This Week in Radio Tech on the road, it can get you out of pickles too. And John Tokok is here to talk about it. John?
With all of the recent cybersecurity attacks against large corporations, we were looking for a product that would give us the ultimate security at our transmitter sites and as well as with our broadcast equipment. Max Connect fits the bill very well. Its greatest security feature is the fact that it gives you a single static IP address. Using this single static IP address allows us to close hundreds of open ports on our firewalls across the company and restrict access to only the Max Connect IPs. This has greatly reduced our exposure to the World Wide Web and made us much more secure moving forward. It's also given us the ability to expand as needed in a secure fashion.
Lots of benefits that you can do with the MaxConnect wireless service. And it ain't the LTE modem that's the special thing. Yes, you need that. But what's the special thing is what MaxConnect Wireless has arranged with the major cell phone carriers, and that is to give you prioritized packet delivery. You get a static IP address, so you don't have to, you know, you can accept packets from a given static IP address on your firewall or filter. You can whitelist just the places that you want. That adds to security immensely. And with any of the carriers like AT&T, T-Mobile, and Verizon, I've got one of mine configured with Verizon and AT&T. And wherever I go, wherever I need it, I always find a carrier that's got good signal strength and great data throughput there. So check it out. Max Connect at maxconnect.com. I know it's spelled funny, and there's a link in the show notes if you need some help with that. We're going to have Josh Bone back on the show at some future date this summer to talk about some of the cool things that Max Connect is offering now, including sales service across the country. They've got lots of engineers working with them now, and they can do installation work. Get a special project that needs to be done, think about Max Connect and give Josh Bone a call. All right, it's This Week in Radio Tech. Chris Tarr is along, and Alan Freeman is here as well. Suncast, let's jump right into our next picture. Oh, gosh, right. What's this, right, Alan?
Right after we came out with Digital DJ, we set up a demo room and started inviting broadcasters and people to come in and look at it. And this particular installation was, I think, there's a cassette deck over there. There's actually not any CD changers there. It was all digital audio on this one. And this was just a dummy station that we had put together. There's where Jim Gilmore comes in again, Kirk. That console came from him. It was one that he refurbished, and we bartered with him. He needed some station software. So we got that from him.
Yeah. Okay, that's a BE console there. What's that? And there's Jim. We ought to have Jim Gilmore on the show. He'd be a good guest as well. Yeah, and there's a Nashville, right? Tennessee. I wonder if that phone number is still active.
Actually, he sold Audio Production, so the phone number is probably good, and the address is good. I think XM Sirius uses some of their studios. But, Jim's no longer with them, though. He sold it to one of his partners.
Gotcha. Oh, I remember seeing these.
Yeah. The again, Ernest Angley of Autogram designed that that 8-channel mixer, that's just the front panel on it. And then Mark Mueller designed the DMX-4B, which was a stereo balanced in and out audio mixer that's controlled inside. You put in a PC and control it. And then up there in the middle is one of those little RPM tone detectors. If you remember, the RPM CDs had tones, subaudible tones on them.
Oh.
And then to the left of that is a little passive audio mixer. Well, I say passive. It's a mixer, and then it had an amplifier stage in it. And that was for the CD changers.
Wow. Okay. All right. Let's move on.
All right. This AXS. Was the jewel. Yeah, we took the guts out of Digital DJ and built a pretty face to it. And this one, people to this day are still running it, and they still love it. It probably is favorites among most people next to SS 32.
Wow. All right.
And I
just
think
different screenshot.
Yes. This is CD mode. So it's just showing you the countdown, the VU meter readings. And looks like it just played a jingle. There's Dave Scott. And he hired me back in 94, and I've been with him ever since. I still do contracts with him. This is my home system that I use to test everything on. It's got a couple of compressor limiters. It's got an amp. It's got three 300 disc CD changers and a computer that has over 32,000 songs in it. And then that's some software that I wrote for it that I used to sell to home audio enthusiasts. It's called WinTrack. And it allowed them to use the changers as a CD change, as a jukebox.
Now, before we jump off of this slide, this picture, there's a one rack unit device right underneath the stereo receiver. It's about, you know, just a 3/4 of the way down the picture here. And I want to tell you, that is one of the finest sounding pieces of audio equipment on the planet.
I agree. I do. It's from Funkalogic.
Chris, you know what that is, don't you?
No, I don't actually.
Oh my gosh, it's amazing. I'll try to find it and put a link in the show notes. It's nothing. It's got some knobs that are named.
Oh, you know? One of those. I had one. Not that one, but
the stereo wombulator or something like that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. I had something like that. Yeah.
Eric Pelleton and Derek Van Choice designed those empty rack panels, and they thought, well, we've got to make them do something. So they put a little VU meter on it. You can buy an active version where the sound makes the meter bounce. And the adjustments are like squishes, compactness, and things like that. Vintage.
I thought they had one that you could turn... You could turn up the level of Bradiness, like as in the Brady Bunch. More Bradiness.
I had one that did funk.
Ah, funk. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I leave mine at max all the time.
Yeah, Funkalogic. And those two guys bought my software and hardware. And Derek, as a matter of fact, has a rack that's got 400-disc Pioneer changers in it. That's how much he loved music.
Oh, my gosh. I'll put this in the show notes, but they have a new product, the Palindromedar 101.
Right.
I guess it's the same backwards and forwards. I don't know. All right, let's move on with the pictures. Sorry to get sidetracked. I saw that. WinTech software. Oh, that's your company. Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead. This is my controller that I designed. And this would control Pioneer or Sony CD changers, depending on which chip you put in it. And I did this apart from working for either Dave or Pete Charlton of the management. And both of them, we ended up using this in their products. So, and I sold 1,000 of them to home consumers. I called that one the PSR-8. It would control up to 24 CD changers.
Got you. Okay. Wow.
And that's one of the first things I wrote for Dave Scott. It was voice tracking back in 1995. Wow. And then we converted it to internet voice tracking.
Right. I remember that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can always tell Dave Scott's print advertising because there wasn't much white space. David wanted to get his money's worth from every ad.
And that was DOS again, that first one, the previous yeah. one, and this one is when I moved it over to Windows. That's okay. The voice tracker again.
Yeah. There's then, oh my goodness.
Mention of his work. And right. This is the Audio Science. This particular card had 4 playback channels and I think 2 record channels.
Yes. Yeah. Seems like I was working at Scott Studios when Dave began a business relationship with Audio Science, and we were very excited about the cards, the audio cards available then. I recall that they were not inexpensive, but oh my goodness, what they could do compared to, I mean, more than anything else on the market at the time.
Yeah, I think they're still a leader, I think. I think they're still putting out good cards.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm sorry. What was that next picture that I talked over? Oh, okay. Yeah, video. So you got into video automation.
Yeah, Dave decided he was going to get into video automation, and so I took on the project, and I was working on this when he sold it to DMARC, and so DMARC helped me on board. I was working from home, and the day that I turned in the source code and said it's done, they let me go. I said, you can't do that. You didn't offer me another job. So they offered me another job, and then I said, no, I don't want to work in Dallas.
All right. What's next here? Easy DJ.
This is when I wrote on my own. This is called Easy DJ Pro, and it had its own music scheduler in it. It could do time announce and temperature announce. And this was just a wild, with .NET, just a wild idea that I had and probably sold 2 dozen of them at the most.
Gotcha. Okay. What's next?
And this is the digital cart machine. And this is, there's a 6 cart thing, and you could tell it to change to the next one. And you could mm-hmm. load list. And this is the 12 cart one. So you could actually pretty much live assist the show with this.
Gotcha.
And I went on my own again and did video. This is my wife in both pictures. This was called VAS, Video Automation System. And there's a few TV stations out there still using it, like my TV and Me TVs. They bought into it to some extent. Hmm. And it's sort of like the radio software. It'll play, and it'll even play audio. You could use it as just radio automation. It's got a button box and all. And this is version 2 of my Easy DJ. Somebody wanted it, the box is bigger so they could see the album artwork and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I see. Interesting. Okay. Wow. So many. Oh, now we're going to steer away from radio automation and go into flight simulator. Now, are you just an enthusiast or did you write some software for this?
My dad owned about 5 airplanes in his lifetime. And so he was crazy about flying and wanted me to be. So we started building flight simulators. And this is a home flight simulator. We were using Microsoft Combat Flight Simulator and Microsoft, I think it was Flight Simulator 2009, FS9 or something like that. And we would fly every Tuesday night with about 5 other people in different places around the world. And we could see each other. We'd have missions and get ribbons, and it was fun.
Wow. Okay. That's all right. Same thing here?
Yep, that's the same thing there. That was one that I put together and took apart. And this is the racing simulator. My dad was also into race cars. And then this is another side business. My wife and I make colloidal silver water and organic cough syrup. We call it Texas organic cough syrup. And we sell it to co-ops. And it's silver water basically helps stimulate cell growth. And you can take it internally or externally. It kills viruses, bacteria, and funguses. And the cough syrup, I designed that so that there was no side effects. It does what it does. But, even a pregnant woman can take it. She can drink the whole bottle in one night, and it's not going to hurt her. It's going to clear up her sinuses.
Wow. Okay. It's amazing the things really that you're into. And that the next picture has some a part of you I didn't know about. What do you have to do with GameStop?
Yeah, I got hired for a contract there. Just before they sold, they hired a bunch of contractors, and I was one of them to beef up their security on their database, on their POS. And they were using Novell and Btrieve, and so there was practically no security. And so we spent 6 months moving it over to Microsoft SQL. And as soon as we got done with the project, they sold the company. So I guess they were worried about selling it with the hose in it.
Wow.
And this was inside the front door at the GameStop headquarters.
Interesting. Full size replicas. All right, what's this? A radio
converter? This is my latest project. Yeah. It's called Radio Converter, and it will take any automation format, audio, the uncompressed audio, and it will convert it to any other automation system software. For instance, on this screen, it's showing the guy's taking wide orbit audio files and dressing them up to work on a BSI Symian system.
Gotcha.
And so we sell this at radioconverter.com, and it saves you hours and hours work. And this is what most people don't know about. This is inside of an audio file, and it's the what we call the metadata. So it tells us where the intro is, how long the segue is, what the sampling rates are, what the name of the song is, and so that's what Radio Converter does. It knows all these formats. There's like 40 formats that we can convert from one to another. Embed that data, and that way, when you start loading it into your system, you don't lose your intros and EOMs and titles and artists and all.
Wow. Okay. And this?
And this is one that's not released yet. This is called Radio Editor, and this is sort of like Dave Scott had a piece of software that I started on and someone else finished that allows you to edit cuts and change the EOMs and the segue points and all this. And so I decided I would write one in Windows, and because we wrote that in DOS, the original one. Trim and Label, I think it was called.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
And so this is my new version. I'm almost ready for release. It determines what the head of it is, the headers, the chunks, and then it allows you to modify the data and then save it as something else.
Gotcha. So what, thinking about music libraries available today for sale, and we're out of time for any more pictures. Alan, if you buy a music library today, let's say from Dave Scott, if he's still selling them, or other people, do they come with all this metadata?
Yeah, if you buy from Dave Scott, it does, as a matter of fact. I've written over 100 utilities for him so that he could massage the data to fit anybody's system.
Mm.
And so that's where I got the idea for Radio Converter. I asked him if I could use some of the code that I wrote, and we could just make one Swiss Army knife version, if you will.
We're talking to Alan Freeman. Alan is the brains behind so much broadcast automation software and obviously some other topics as well. Chris Tarr is with us. Chris, are you still there in the studio?
Oh yeah. Yes. No, I was looking at these, that software that he's been developing, and some of it I've used and some of it I'm looking forward to checking out.
And it's amazing. You know, of course, a lot of this, to our eyes, the stuff from the mid-90s, you know, looks old, looks dated. And yet, as Alan told us, there are, you know, plenty of customers still using the same software from way back then. I find that interesting, but also find interesting the idea that things developed back then, some of those models of working are still in use today. We didn't have anything else to compare it to. So you had to invent something.
And the other thing is a lot of those things were developed to be bulletproof, and they really are. And that's why some of this stuff is still well loved, and some people are still using it today because, boy, it just works.
I remember when I worked for Scott Studios, you know, they had separate computers. They called the SS and the PB, and the SS is what ran the log and told the PB through a serial link, which was extraordinarily reliable, to what to play. And so it was two very distinct functions of automation, and it was just as reliable as it could be. And you know what? The PB had no idea of what was on the log. It just played what was told. Bam, play this. Bam, play that. Reliable. Now, and I'm not saying things today aren't reliable, but back then that was one way to achieve some reliability. What was really cool is the time that we took two computers and put them in one case for demo purposes. That one of them was hanging upside down from the lid of the other one. That was pretty interesting. Hey, we got to take a quick break. Our show, This Week in Radio Tech with Alan Freeman. We've got a few more comments yet to come, and Chris Tarr is with us too. Our show is brought to you in part by Broadcasters General Store and another amazing piece of software with a hardware controller, and that's VoxPro.
Hey, what's happening? St. John here, coming to you from Command Central, and wanted to tell you about the absolute best partner you can have in radio. I'm talking about, boom, Wheatstone's VoxPro. Lots of different audio software out there. Why VoxPro? It's the only software designed to do what we needed to do, which is record, edit, playback in real time. When I say lightning fast, I'm going to show you how fast you can edit stuff up in VoxPro right now. Literally three clicks on the controller, mark left, mark right, everything that gets marked, you hit delete, it goes away. It's literally that fast. So we're going to take this part right here. Boom. From caller 9 to him saying, I'm ready.
Five, ready for that secret sound.
Boom. All of that stuff, hit delete, it goes away. Here's your edit.
You are tackling secret sound, caller 9.
I'm ready, St. John.
One of the best features of version 7, this is awesome. It's effects macros, and you can literally put a chain of effects together so that instead of having to normalize a phone bit and then use noise reduction on it and EQ it and all that, you can literally build a chain. One button, this button, this one's called call right here. I just click that. All of those processes happen instantaneously. Final thing that I love about VoxPro, and there's so much more to get into, but one of my favorite things, you can load it on a laptop. I've literally done my show from a hotel room in Armenia to the conference room at jury duty. Great thing, no one could tell the difference. VoxPro makes it totally easy. Telling you, if you're looking for the best on-air partner, call my friends at Wheatstone, ask them about VoxPro, and you'll be glad you did.
And you can get VoxPro from Broadcasters General Store. Just spent last week with Buck Waters from BGS on that trip to the Northwest. But they got a bunch of good people there at BGS. They have an amazing system for taking the orders, telling you what's in stock, how soon things can get there, the phone number. And they're set up for you to call them. And of course, you can go to the website, no problem. But if you want to just talk to somebody and find out about something, talk it out. 352-622-7700. That's 352-622-7700 for Broadcasters General Store. Thanks a lot, BGS, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, our final couple of minutes here with Alan Freeman. And Alan, I didn't give you a good heads up. I was wondering if you could finish out the show with something to leave our listeners with, and maybe you have some thoughts about where we've come in automation and what's maybe where we're going with automation. Do you have any thoughts about artificial intelligence or its place in radio, if any, or just what do you think the future holds the next few years?
Well, I've got some good connections, and we've been talking about artificial intelligence as far as music scheduling and being able to tell the AI that we want all the top 10 songs from each month for the year, and then be able to immediately turn those around into a format of some sort. So that's one of the things that I've been thinking about. One of the things you did mention was the good, the bad, and the ugly. I wanted to cover that real quick. The good was we saved radio because radio was going down the tubes back in the early 90s. Stations were having a hard time, staying afloat. And so I think we saved radio, especially small market where they could not get enough good talent to work them. And then the bad, of course, Chris rushed on that, was skipping audio on CDs or corrupt audio files. And the ugly was macros. They saved our life. They created, they allowed us to create functions that we hadn't written into the code yet. But at the same time, they were used so wildly that, and not undocumented, that we could go back to a station later and not figure out what the heck we were doing with those macros. So that was the ugly part.
Wow. Chris, do you have any thoughts about the future of automation? Because you're in charge of a bunch of radio stations there in Wisconsin. You guys see yourself needing anything or where you're going to be in a few years from now in that direction?
You know, I think where we're going is, you know, we're still in a situation where we're going where, you know, some places are already, which is, you know, we just had a discussion yesterday about we're going to start virtualizing our playout machines on servers for the entire group. So I think, you know, I think as always, radio has been kind of behind the times when it comes to technology. You know, they're just now looking at things like virtualization, which has been going on for a long, long time. TELUS Alliance has their new products out that are taking advantage of that. And I think, you know, AI aside, we could do a whole thing on what AI is going to do for radio. But I do think from the engineering side, we're going to see a lot more virtualization. Because right now it's so wasteful how radio uses computers. You have streaming computers, we've got playout computers, we've got audio servers, we've got file servers, we've got, you know, all these different things. And kind of what led to this is in our group, we have in each market, we have an audio server. Well, you know, there's really no reason to do that because we duplicate the files in all of the markets. It's just, we've always had a single server in each location to store audio. Well, why not have, you know, one server that, you know, handles everything. Plus we've got, you know, a couple of machines that do nothing but record feeds and, you know, why not throw all that on a single server in our one data center that has, you know, the redundant capacity. So we're going to start doing that. So, I think there's going to be a lot more of that going on where they're really starting to look at, where even just from the savings standpoint, you know, that save some money, save some electricity, and just allows you to operate more efficiently. So, you know, my hope is that as we go on, some of the smarter operators will start looking at technology and how we can use that to start cutting down the bottom line a little bit more.
I'll say the obvious thing that whenever we talk about automation, and we've been talking, been doing it for since the early 90s, is that it can be, it's a tool. And it can be used very well. It can be used very poorly. And we've all heard examples of it being used pretty darn poorly. And a lot of us have heard examples of it being used very, very well. And I appreciate that in my radio experience with my business partner, Larry Fuss, and our 14 or so radio stations, when we do the ones we do automate, they're very well done. And that's a testament to Larry's desire for things to work well and tweaking things here and there so that they do. The tools are all there with the automation systems. And if you just use them well, use them right, and care about, you know, how the songs are dubbed and cut in there and where the cue marks are, and you know, be careful about your ingest, what's going in there, its level and the length and all that stuff, you can really have a great sounding broadcast facility that sounds live. That sounds like there's people there running it. And that's what I love that I'm around a company that does that as well. Chris, I would imagine your company, people care about how it sounds. And automation is one of those things that it can make you sound bad, or you can make it sound bad if you don't care. I want to give Alan the last word. Alan, if you've got anything before we have to shove off here in about 1 minute.
I think we can thank the late, great Paul Schaefer for all of this. I had the opportunity to meet him after we created Digital DJ and Access. He dropped by, and he was a wonderful man, and his dream was just to keep the radio rolling, and we're doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Alan Freeman, thank you for being with us. Well, people can find you on your Facebook page, and we'll have some links to you professionally as well in our show notes. Chris Tarr, thank you for being with us today. I appreciate you taking part of your day to spend with us and sharing your knowledge. Good to see you.
Enjoy being here as always.
Well, I'll be here from be coming to you from Hawaii next week. The International Broadcasters Idea Bank is going on in Lihue, Hawaii, on the island of Kauai. Next week. So we'll be here next Thursday and we'll see you then. I'd love to have you join us. I'm not sure who we're talking to, probably some engineers and station owners that are at the Idea Bank is who we're going to try to chat with if they haven't all gone back home yet. I may have to do the broadcast from out on the beach. Thanks to Suncast for producing another great show. Appreciate you very much, sir. And we'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.